Chase Willie D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook Live as well, all presented by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Derek Mason live at Hermitage Golf Course today, and we say hello to Mitch Light of The Athletic. Talk some college football with him. Mitch, how are we?
I'm good. Hope you guys are doing well.
We're good. It's windy, but, you know, we're making it out here, having a good time. But excited about a game that's taking place in Knoxville this week. Do you think that this is a trap game for Tennessee as they take on Kentucky?
Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. I guess trap is in the – I don't know how I'm going to say this. Is your definition of trap. I should have thought that through before I started speaking. this isn't
still
live,
sound
is
good.
It? We're not – okay, good. Yeah, we'll just yep. edit that out.
We'll edit that out.
You're good. Kentucky is an interesting team. They were kind of all the rage with a great start, and they were one play away from winning at Ole Miss and probably, you know, deserved to win. I don't know if they deserved to win. They should have won that game, but their best player or one of their best players, Will Levis, made some poor plays down the stretch, didn't protect the ball, so they lost. Then they lose at home to South Carolina, so you're like, how good is this team? But then they come back and they, more so than anything, the defense against Mississippi State. So they're a very good defensive team. I guess you call it a trap game. They are good enough to win this game if they don't turn the ball over and they can force Tennessee into some field goals maybe and just kind of – same thing we talk about Tennessee all the time, the fast start. That's what basically – there's a lot of things that, you know, reasons why Alabama lost the game, but part of it was they dug themselves a big hole and they had to be perfect to come back and win that game, and they were close to perfect and almost won, but they didn't. Tennessee just has a habit, because their offense is so good, of jumping out to big leads. And Kentucky, unlike Alabama, isn't as explosive enough to come back from a 21-0 lead unless they get some like short fields or some turnovers. So I would expect Tennessee to win this game comfortably by like double digits. But, you know, we've learned to not really be surprised by anything. And this will be one of the best defensive teams that Tennessee faces this year. So it's definitely an intriguing matchup.
Do you have $86 million that Texas A&M can borrow? Because I think they're going
to
be
all over this. They are not going to fire him. They're not going to fire him. They will not do it.
All those five stars and he can't win.
Through 55 games, Kevin Sumlin has a better record at Texas A&M than Jimbo Fisher.
Yeah, but he also had a buyout that was much.
Yes.
So I guess I can say this because you guys could see this if you went to The Athletic. We're not going to answer, like, literally just when the phone rang for this, I'm in the process of editing Ari Wasserman's mailbag. It's pretty mailbag. And there was a question in there, I'm paraphrasing, basically like, can you get a hitman for less than $85 million? So it tells you where a Texas A&M fan are. So, again, we're not condoning that behavior. We're not using it in the mailbag, but it was a question posed by one of the quote-unquote fans. So, they are stuck with him, whatever term you want to use. Jimbo Fisher will be the head coach at Texas A&M next year unless he decides to leave on his own, which I find that highly, highly, highly unlikely.
Well, Andy Staples' byline on The Athletic is Jimbo Fisher is college football's version of a Supreme Court justice. No matter what, he's not going
exactly.
anywhere.
Exactly. It's $86 million. 86.
Well, yeah, and
can't fire him.
Andy wrote about this, and everyone, you know, there's a lot of problems. But the problem is that, like, they have no ability to force him to do anything. Like, you know, you see coaches, the AD can say, you know, change your offensive coordinator, change your defensive coordinator, because sometimes they have leverage. They can fire a coach, they can buy him out. They can't do anything to Jimbo Fisher, and it's up to him to look in the mirror and say, you know what, this isn't 2012 anymore. I don't have Jameis Winston in the ACC. We need to be a little more creative with our offense. Because that's, you know, I was going to say we can't sit here and, like, look at the X's and O's necessarily. Maybe, Derek, you can and look, because you played it at a high level. But, like, there's just something missing offensively. Sure, they don't have the right quarterback in place, but they've got enough good players where, you know, what's that stat? They haven't scored over 25 points in, like, you know, 3 years against an FBS team or something crazy like that. It's just absurd how bad they are offensively.
Now, Mitch, what do you make of these stats? Because I was I'm watching UT, and obviously we know this is probably – the best offense in college football we've seen this year, with the way they can score and from different ways they can score. And Hendon Hooker is put himself in a position to make a run at the Heisman Trophy. But their defense, they've given up a lot of points. But it was a stat on this defense as far as their blitz percentage, which is 41%, which is the highest in the SEC. The pressures, which is 35%, is highest in the SEC. But they only have a 5% sack rate, which is 11th out of 14 teams in the SEC. What do you make of the of that defense? Because at times that front looks good, but then at times they can get shredded for a lot of points.
Yeah, those are interesting numbers. One thing that I think sometimes we pay a little too much attention to sacks. I would like to know their pressure rate. How often are they getting pressure on the quarterback? Because that's in many
they
cases
get pressure on the quarterback 35% of the time.
Okay. Yeah. Yep. So yeah. Again, like you need to know, like how does that relate nationally? You know, I would say that their offense. In most years, you'd say this defense isn't good enough to win an SEC championship or national championship, but it's a football team. It's a team. It's an offense, defense, special teams. They're good enough in the other phases where they can, we think they can mask that. You know, we'll find out down the stretch. Still have to play Kentucky, still have to play Georgia. They beat Georgia in an SEC championship game. You know, we'll find out. And it's kind of a little tangent here, one of the things that, I'm not saying people don't think of it this way, but how difficult it is to win a national championship because you have to beat three elite teams in a row, especially from your SEC. You've got to win the conference championship game. Then you've got to beat a team like an Ohio State or Clemson, if you consider them elite. It's just difficult to win those three games in a row. That's where their defense comes into question. Is that defense good enough to play well enough in three straight games? They made enough plays in the Alabama game to win that game. You know, could you say they still gave up all those points? But when their offense is that good, you don't need to be close to perfect. You just need to make enough plays.
Now, do they have the best set of wide receivers in college football that you've seen this year?
No, I'd say Ohio State still.
Okay.
Which is amazing because Ohio State lost two first round picks and their best player. Jackson Smith and Jigba. He's played parts of three games, but has barely played this year. But Marvin, have you guys have not seen Marvin Harrison Jr.
Oh, that kid's
play.
Good.
He is phenomenal. And Emeka Egbuka, a five-star kid from Seattle, is outstanding as well. And they've got five-star freshmen who can't really get on the field. So, you know, I would say hard to argue against Tennessee's productivity, but I'd say from a talent standpoint, it's Ohio State, and Ohio State's guys are very productive as well. Their top two guys are averaging 18 yards a catch, which is phenomenal. I mean, anything over 15, 16 is great. So Tennessee deserves to be in that discussion, but I'd go with Ohio State.
Talking to Mitch Light from The Athletic and going around college football. So, Mitch, a tough one for Vanderbilt. They dug themselves a hole, got back in the game, but they fall short, and there's still a lot of concern about, you know, can they get over the hump and find a way to win a conference game or two? My biggest thing, and I'm sure you're looking at this as well, with the state of college football where you're literally having to keep everybody on your roster there every year, can he build enough positivity, belief, that it's going to be better in the coming years to hang on to the nucleus of players he is building? Because he needs way more players. They've got some very thin units when you watch them play. There are some positives, but it's hard to really see it. And I'm concerned about, you know, some of the players looking around and saying, hey, do I want to wait this out or do I want to take maybe an offer to go where I might be in better shape to succeed in the short term?
Sure. I mean, that's the million-dollar question, and I guess pun not intended with, you know, $1 million, you know, with NIL and stuff like that. But I think it's more about just winning. And that's the big question. Like, if you guys ever hear Barton Simmons talk, a term he uses, he's like, these are the guys that, like, bought into their culture. That's the way they look at it. And you could say it's a cliche and all that. So that's the question. Whether, like, Jaden McGowan, a true freshman who's been really, really good, you know, is that a guy that is quote-unquote bought into their culture and is willing to wait it out, so to speak? So, you know, we'll find out. I'm sure there will be some turnover. There's turnover in every program. It's just what can they sustain, you know, what is that number of guys and at what positions? Obviously, you can be good at four positions in offense, but if your offensive line's not good, then it's going to collapse everything. So, hey, just as an aside, Willie, about this, and I looked this up. You guys saw the play, obviously, the defensive touchdown for Vanderbilt with CJ, I forgot his name, but the, Anthony Orji, too. You guys saw that play, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So just, I went back and watched this, and this is just was like instant replay. Once the ref went over and put the headset on, how long do you think it took him to confirm touchdown? I'm not talking about after the touchdown. After the ref went under the hood with the headset. It was a minute and 50 seconds.
That's
yeah, they're taking
now, you
it
can argue
completely
that's only
too
a
long.
Minute, who cares, it's college. But when you're trying to cut the time, I was floored by that. Like,
yeah.
It was
and
clearly
that happens
a touchdown.
All the time.
This is not like a Vanderbilt homer type. It's like, okay, you check maybe, was it targeting? No, it wasn't targeting, that's clear. Was his arm going forward? Nope, it wasn't. Like, 20 seconds. And it's just one of those where you just sit there and you're like, what are they possibly looking at? So I just realized that, rewatched that play the other day because I was working when the game was on. So
boy, they've got to balance it out. If they want to keep replay the way it is, which I'm not sure. Maybe there's a better – maybe they need more NFL challenge. If you want to challenge, you only get a certain amount. Something to balance out the fact that these games are going on way, way too long.
I see one that I like, Matt Hinton, who covers college football, does a really good job. I'm not actually not sure who he writes for anymore. But he's always said, he's like, you should be like the NFL. Coaches get a challenge or X amount of challenges. And then, like, the screen goes blank after 90 seconds. Like, if they can't decide after 90 seconds, then the call stands or something like that. Because, you know, there are some plays that are really difficult. Like, did a guy get his feet in bounds, all this stuff, and it's very tough. Like, but there are also a lot of plays we're just watching on TV, and we're like, there's just no, that should be 15 seconds. That should be 20 seconds. So, but, yeah, it's just, it's the games are so long, and that's an easy way to eliminate some of them because you just don't need to initiate replay four, five, six times a game.
Now, Mitch, is the West Alabama's to lose, even though they lost to UT and Ole Miss lost to LSU and LSU has a loss, is this still Alabama's division to win, the West?
Yeah, I think so. Especially, well, you know, LSU's playing some really good, surprisingly playing very, very well. But I think, Bryce, if you saw that Tennessee game and saw what Bryce Young can do, I don't know how you pick against them. That was like my biggest takeaway from, well, there's a lot of takeaways from that game, obviously. But I thought Bryce Young was just fantastic. Like, Hendon Hooker had great stats, but, like, I thought Bryce Young did more of it on his own than Hendon Hooker did for his team, like, which is crazy to say that, you know, supporting cast and all that, or a lot of it was scheme, whatever. But I thought Bryce Young was phenomenal in that game. So I don't see Alabama losing to any more SEC West teams, and everyone already has a loss. So, I mean, in theory, if LSU beat Alabama, they would own the tiebreaker there. So that would be the only team on paper that I think would have a chance to unseat them in the West.
All right. We'll see how it shakes out this weekend. Going to be another fun one. Mitch, appreciate it as always. We'll talk next week.
Take care, guys.
Mitch Light from The Athletic joins us every Tuesday at 1 o'clock talking some college football. Something that we discussed earlier today about the Predators' defense, well, I think we have more answers to that after practice today. We'll discuss that coming up next. It's Chase, Willie, and D-Mace. We're live at the Hermitage Golf Course for the Special Olympics of Tennessee Golf Tournament here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
I think as a person who's fitting in grade, I mean, he's mature. He brings lots of wisdom to our team. Of course, he's got the two Stanley Cups as a player. I think he's a little bit in the same boat as a lot of other guys. There's a lot of good things that are happening, and then we're struggling a little bit. And, you know, yeah, we got Ekki playing on his offside, meaning he's a left-hand shot playing on his right side. And maybe that is something that we need to look at. He's been really good in his career with younger players. We've got some younger defense, and maybe that's who he should play with.
There you go. That's Preds General Manager David Poile earlier today talking about Ryan McDonough and maybe alluding to some things when it comes to the defensive pairings. Welcome back in. Chase, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, of course, one half of Robbie and Rex Road, tweeted this earlier. Preds are going to be switching up the D pairs this week. Yossi Fabro, Ekholm Carrier, McDonough, Lazon.
So that is one of the three things that I think are things to look at as to how the Predators are going to get back on track, or at least attempt.
Yeah.
What has put them in this position? And these are in no particular order, but that is one. That's why I asked David Poile about Ryan McDonough. Ryan McDonough is a great player. But right now, it's unfortunate because it looked like it was getting traction all through the preseason and all through the European trip. It looked like it was developing chemistry, McDonough and Ekholm. You heard David Poile say it. What is the issue with them? They're both left shots.
Right.
So it has moved Matthias Ekholm to his offside. And I think if you watch, there's no question Matthias Ekholm is doing his best, but it is not comfortable for him moving over there. He caught – this is, again, where I think John Hines deserves some credit. Before they made the trade, John Hines called Matthias Ekholm and said, would you be willing to move over to the left side? And Matthias Ekholm, being the team guy that he is, said, yep, I'm all over it. If we can get a guy like Ryan McDonough, I'll do it. Let's do this. We need a player like him. He's a winning player. He's done it all in this league. But unfortunately, if you look at the numbers, they're underwater as a pair defensively. So they're going to tinker with it. They have gone with those pairs left-right. And you say, well, why would you do that? Well, or why would you not want to do that? Well, it moves now Ryan McDonough to, quote-unquote, the third defense pair. And he's a guy that you would think you want big minutes from. So essentially what they're doing is going back to the top four from last year, Fabbro and Josi, Carrier and Ekholm, who were a good pair last year, and Lauzon and McDonough as your third defense pair. So you have a lefty and a righty. So it's more of your conventional pairings, and we'll see if that works better for the overall defensive game.
Yeah, because look, I just think individually you could say all six of those guys need to play better for whatever reason. They got it.
100%. 100%.
All six individually can work on things. So you mentioned you have three things that stand out to you. We kind of just hit on one of them that that concern you, that you see could help improve this team, or that are going wrong right now that you think they need to work on.
Yeah. Number one is overall team defense. They've given up too many prime scoring chances. Mm-hmm. And David Poile referred to it, you know, some big mistakes at key times, some mental mistakes, some game management mistakes. So it's not all the defensemen, but I do think one thing that they're addressing with the defense pairs, I'm hoping will help some of that. It'll cut down on mistakes. They'll have balance up and down the lineup. And let's throw this in while we're talking defense. I'm glad that Mark Borowiecki is okay. It was a very scary moment on Saturday night. I've never heard that play so quiet as they attended to him, carried him off on a stretcher. But he's back home. I don't know when he's going to play again. It's not the most important thing right now.
Yeah, that was scary.
That was really scary. But we wish Boro well, and hopefully we'll get good progress going forward here. But in the meantime, Lauzon is going to be the guy in there.
Have they made a roster move yet? I would assume that's probably coming.
It's a good question. I don't know.
I haven't seen it, but I would.
And they don't have to make one because they have six defensemen. And you don't have to carry a 23rd guy, but it is an option to have a seventh.
They typically like to do that, though.
Yep, they do. But and I would think when you're at home for a couple of games, you don't have to do it.
Yeah.
You can get a guy here quicker. Now, when they go out on the road a long road trip, they would probably be more apt to bring a seventh guy out there. So keep an eye on that. Number two, David Poile mentioned this. You have all kinds of faith in UC Saros. But so far, he hasn't been himself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he's been put under the gun. He hasn't given up soft goals at all. But what's the bar for UC Saros? Let's just use the stat, goals saved above average.
Uh-huh.
Last 2 years ago, when the team came on like gangbusters at the end of the season, he was 20.9 goals saved above average. So he's saving 21 more goals than the average goalie over the course of the season. That's a huge number. That's wins. That's extra wins right there. Last year, 23 above average. Mm-hmm. That's why. So he's a guy that is a difference maker. He's stealing games. He's winning games. This year right now so far, -1.4. So it's not like that's awful, but it's below average. And he's not a below average goaltender. I thought Saturday was an example. You know, you're just used to him coming up with the huge saves, and because the standard is so high. That was a game where the Predators outchanced the Flyers by a big margin. They had huge advantages in terms of the analytics, but Carter Hart was better than UC Saros. That's just, you know, that was a fact, right? And it's not that Saros played bad, but he didn't elevate his team. So that's the second thing. And UC Saros has been a slow starter over the course of his career.
He has.
And then once it kicks in, he can carry you for a while. So let's have faith. Let's hope that's coming sooner than later, because with the teams that they're going to play here soon, starting with the Blues, you got the Capitals who can score a lot. Then the teams out in Western Canada, the Calgary Flames are really good. Edmonton, really good. You got your first matchup with Colorado coming up on the horizon here. You're going to need UC Saros at his best if you're going to start getting points here in the next few games. And then the third thing is the most obvious one. It's the power play. They've got two power play goals, and neither one of them were game changers. One of them came in Dallas when they were behind 3-0, and the other one was Saturday when they were behind 3-0, and there was only a minute or two left in the game. So they have yet to get a power play goal that means anything, and you cannot survive in this league if you don't have a good power play. The average power play now, if you're not getting over 20%, you're going to be a little bit below average. It's the way the power plays go now. Goal scoring is up. Your power play has got to do its part to help you win. You heard David Poile say it. How many times the power play elevated them last year and put games away? You're up 3-1, and you get a power play goal, make it 4-1, it's game over sometimes. Or, hey, the other team makes it 3-2, but then you get a power play, you cash in 4-2, maybe you get the empty net goal after that. That's what they're not getting right now. 2-for-29, that's not only not good, that's way below what you've got to have.
Well, and
they've got the pieces to do it. It hasn't happened yet, but that's what they got to figure out.
Well, and watching that game the other night against Philadelphia, you know, the every power play chance they got, I felt like Philadelphia just had an answer for it. They could shut down the middle passing lanes. Everything was having to come from the perimeter, and there were a couple times that, you know, they'd feed it to Forsberg, and he'd try and get a shot, but you could tell it was awkward. It wasn't the perfect shot, the exact shot that he wanted. So I don't know what they have to change up there to try and make it a little more dynamic for opposing teams. And I truthfully, I don't know where Philadelphia ranks in penalty kill, but they did a really good job killing off the Predators' chances the other night.
Well, Philadelphia is playing well right now. I don't know. I don't think they're going to be there at the end. But I give them credit for, number one, they got a red-hot goalie.
That's a torts team, though.
That's a torts team. So what do? They play structure.
Yep.
They block shots. And they have a goalie that can elevate them. That's how they're doing it right now.
Have
and that's
some
how
tenacity,
they did it.
Too.
The Predators had 77 shot attempts. Philadelphia had 44. Most of the time, you're going to win that game when you have that many more shot attempts.
It's almost 2-1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And chances were good, but Philadelphia limited the really golden chances that you're looking for. You mentioned passes through the middle. That's really the key to a good power play, finding ways to complete passes from side to side, get the defense to shift. Your percentages go way up to being able to score. And then when you make that pass, that next play, you got to execute the play. You got to make a play.
Yeah.
The Predators right now are just – they're low right now in – the playmakers making the play. And so they got to heat up. And I think over time, over 82 games, you got to have confidence that those guys will start making plays, starting with Roman Josi, who's got 1 point. And he's getting just as many shot attempts as he normally gets. It's just not going in for him right now, or he's not getting the assist. It's really baffling, but you hope that over 82 games that will change. I'm confident that it will.
We will see coming up Thursday night against the St. Louis Blues. Hey, be sure to follow us on Instagram at 1025 The Game Nashville. We have that rocking and rolling for you, so be sure to give that a follow. Coming up next, your chance to win a pair of tickets to see Jason Bonham as he will be playing Jason Bonham's Led Zeppelin evening at the Ryman Auditorium on Wednesday, November 30th. But you must participate in trivia. Answer our trivia question. Coming up next, we're live at the Hermitage Golf Course today here. Chase Willie and D-Mace, 1025, 106.3 The Game. Chase Willie DeMace, 102.5, 106.3, the game. We're live at the Hermitage Golf Course today. Special Olympics of Tennessee Golf Tournament. Again, if you want to help, you can text GIVE, G-I-V-E, to 615-270-9948 or visit SpecialOlympicsTN.org. It's one of my favorite times of the show. Trivia time, 615-737-1025. You must call and give Nick Kieser the answer. And the winner will win a pair of tickets to see Jason Bonham's Led Zeppelin evening at the Ryman Auditorium on Wednesday, November 30th. I saw Jason Bonham play drums for Sammy Hagar this summer. The guy is phenomenal, just like his dad. I mean, he can play note for note just like John Bonham. So it's a cool – and I've seen his Led Zeppelin experience before too. So it's a really cool, cool thing. So here is the trivia question. I'll give it today.
Do it.
Because we were just talking about
watching
this.
I'm watching clips from this game that we're going to ask about, and I just want to make up – years later, I want to see if I still feel the way I did back then.
So we're going all the way back to 1995, the AFC Championship game, Three River Stadium, the Indianapolis Colts, quarterbacked by Jim Harbaugh, the Pittsburgh Steelers, quarterbacked by Neil O'Donnell, one of Derek's former teammates. Steelers win that game 20-16 and advance to the Super Bowl, where they would lose to my Dallas Cowboys in Super Bowl 30. But controversial play at the end of the game. Jim Harbaugh throws a Hail Mary to the end zone. It's ruled as a drop pass by the officials. The Steelers win the game. What was the name of the receiver, the intended receiver for the Colts that, according to the officials, dropped that pass and gave the Steelers a win? 615-737-1025.
Now, you can debate whether he was actually the intended receiver, because yeah, they would have taken anybody. It was a jump ball, obviously. And I've watched it from a lot of different angles. He had a chance to make it.
Did he not? Because on one angle, you see it, and then the guy flashes in front of you.
Yeah,
so you can't,
he's kind
really
of screened.
Yeah.
There's not a great look to know if he caught it or not. And this was before a replay anyway, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So the call on the field was the call. Mm-hmm. There's nothing you could do about it. They've shown it six times in this thing, and I still I'm not sure.
You're like,
I would not call it a drop, but it would have been a phenomenal hang on to it, because there was all kinds of people trying to wrestle for it and all that stuff. But this is the guy that had it.
If he catches it, the Colts
go to the Super Bowl and not the Steelers.
So I'm watching it right now.
It's close.
I think
it's a catch.
Well, but how could you can't tell definitively, because like Derek was saying, you don't really have that definitive look and see the ball.
Well, it'd have been called a no catch anyway, because even with replay, if you couldn't see it, you got to go with the call on the field.
Well, you think about today, though, they have more camera angles than they did then. But that was so what's funny is I remember this game. This is like one of those, you know, I was young, but this is one of those early games that I remember watching. And they replayed it a few years ago. I guess it was during COVID, and I watched it from start to finish. But a fun one for sure. But the name of the receiver that dropped Jim Harbaugh's last-second Hail Mary for the Colts.
On.
Failed to hang on, maybe is the way that we put it. 615
or did he hang on?
125.
Dun, 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 dun.
So I want to get your guys' thoughts. I'm watching Monday Night Football last night, and I flip over, and I'd forgotten we had a Manning cast. So I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going to check out the Manning cast, because you guys know how much I love the Manning cast. So I flip over to ESPN2 in the fourth quarter towards the end of the game. They're talking to Vince Vaughn. So it's Peyton, Eli, and Vince Vaughn. And they get to the two-minute warning. Vince goes away. Bears get the ball back. They intercept a pass, and they're right there, you know, first and goal. Peyton is sitting there going, I'd run it up. I'd score. Don't take knees. Don't run the clock down. You know, you need a confidence-building win. Build confidence in your quarterback. I'd score here. Now, my initial thought to that was, I don't think he's completely wrong. It's the pros. Like, you want to stop him, stop him. They end up getting to fourth down, and they take a knee. And so they turn the ball over, and then the Patriots come out, and they take a knee. And Peyton and Eli are joking, like, I don't think I've ever seen that before. We have two knees in a row by both teams. But that's what it was.
That is, I don't think I've ever seen that myself.
But Peyton was adamant that Fields, you needed him to score there. That, look, yeah, you got the win. It doesn't matter. Nothing's going to change. I probably know where Derek's going to go with this, but Coach Willie, what's your thoughts there?
First of all, let me say I got to tip my hat to Fields because he's been pressured a ton, sack rate really high, not a lot of help, a lot of boo birds out there. Did we get the right guy? That was a big game for him. What a huge game. But
yeah, it was huge. It was a big
time. I'm gonna go with Peyton on this one.
I'm with Peyton.
You got to get a man some confidence.
Yep.
Right now, he doesn't have any, even though they won. It still doesn't seem like he's totally figured it out. And does he have a bunch of playmakers? I mean, you know, I know for sure he has one in Mooney. But
I love that kid.
They haven't gotten him the ball enough.
No, they need to. But I like him a lot.
I like
St. Brown too.
Yeah, St. Brown's good. I'm with Peyton. It's almost like the college mentality, like just score again so we can get some confidence moving forward.
Sure.
You know, rather than downing the ball and you know we're gonna win. Let's build some confidence in this.
So another thing that came up during the Manning cast that I knew would get Willie's attention is Peyton and Eli both kind of started poo-pooing on some analytics. Because they're talking about fourth and ones and, you know, going for it, what the analytics say. And it was actually Eli that goes, look, I don't care what the analytics tell you. If you've been bad on third and one or third and short all night, what's to say that's going to get better on fourth and one, what have you? And he goes, or vice versa. And he goes, there's sometimes where I think these coaches rely too much on the analytics when just use the eye test. You've been able to run on New England all night. So why not go for it? Like the chances are you're probably going to get it. And basically their conversation was there is a place for analytics. It's important. It's important to look at the sheet. What does the sheet tell you? But sometimes as a coach, you got to go with your gut. And that goes back to Mike Vrabel that early on in his career, and I think he's gotten better at it. He's not perfect, but he's gotten better at it, that there were times where I think he was just listening to too much where he just needed to go with his gut and decide whether to kick, whether to go for it, what have you.
Yeah, there's a lot to process because there's so many numbers. But I think it's a blend. The blend is important. I'll give you one where I thought the analytics, I think they talked about it at the time. There was a 1% difference of the probability of winning on kicking a field goal as opposed to going for it. But the situation was this. The Dolphins were up 16-10. It was like fourth and two. They were in the red zone.
Yeah.
If they score a touchdown, they probably put the game away. But in my mind, I'm thinking there's no way the Steelers, with their quarterback situation, are going to score twice. Put me up by two scores, and I love my chances of winning the game. That's the analytics can't tell you that. Like when the sheet says, hey, this is what the situation, that's in a vacuum, right? That's not these two teams in this situation. In these conditions, so I think you weigh the analytics, but it can't just be the end all be all. There's got to be a context of the game involved, and they went for it and missed it. Mm-hmm. And instead of being up 19-10, they're up 16-10, and they had a scare at the end of the game. Mm-hmm. You know, one big play by a rookie quarterback, Kenny Pickett. He throws the pick in the end zone, but if he makes a great play, the Dolphins could have lost that game because they didn't kick the field goal.
I mean, you can go by analytics if you want, and, you know, every coach has that chart on their page. Should I go for it? And it tells you the percentages and everything else. That's great to have, but you know your football team. And, yes, the numbers may be in your favor as a whole to go for it on fourth and one. But if your team hasn't been doing anything all day, why would you go for it?
You got to factor that.
You got to know what your team is looking like at that particular moment.
All right, we do have a winner. Congratulations to Matt Sheely. He answered the trivia question, which was 1995 AFC Championship game. Colts, quarterback by Jim Harbaugh. Steelers, quarterback by Neil O'Donnell. Steelers win the game. It was a Hail Mary at the end by Harbaugh, thrown into the end zone. A little bit of controversy. Was it caught? Was it not? Who was the name of the receiver? Aaron Bailey.
Aaron Bailey is the guy. And if you want to go on YouTube and watch a great account of the game, it's on there. You can watch it, and you can sort of see for yourself. There were two officials that came flying in there and said, absolutely, it hit the ground. But it is really hard to tell. Aaron Bailey is really hard to tell.
It almost looks like a Steeler kept it from hitting the ground.
It is close. It is close.
Which, if I'm a DB, I'm like knocking that thing down.
Remember Tom Jackson on the NFL Prime? Knock it down! Knock it down!
Again, we are live today. We've been here since 6 o'clock this morning at Hermitage Golf Course, Special Olympics of Tennessee, the golf tournament presented by Pinnacle. Special Olympics Tennessee provides year-round sports training, athletic competition, and health screenings for people with intellectual disabilities. You can support their work during today's Radiothon by texting GIVE, that's G-I-V-E, to 615-270-9948, or visit SpecialOlympicsTN.org. We'll wrap things up with another special guest next here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase Williams, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. We're streaming on the Game National app. We're live at the Hermitage Golf Course today. Special Olympics of Tennessee Golf Tournament presented by Pinnacle. Again, we've been pushing this all day long. Their Radiothon, you can text GIVE, G-I-V-E, to 615-270-9948 or visit SpecialOlympicsTN.org. And we've been able to talk to some great people that help out, but also some of the Special Olympic athletes, just like Eric Wilson, who is with us. Josh Wilson, Unified Partner and Volunteer, also here. Or John, it's John, I'm sorry.
Right.
John with us. As well. But Eric represented Team Tennessee at the 2022 Special Olympics USA Games in Orlando as a member of the golf team where he played with his dad, John. Eric, thanks so much for doing this. How is Orlando?
Orlando's good.
How'd you shoot?
It went good.
You felt good about your golf game?
Yes, sir.
John, what about you?
Yeah, well, he played well. I mentioned earlier, I had one of those days where I finished and looked at my clubs and said, "Why do you hate me?" So we didn't medal, but we had more fun with the other teams from across the country. We played four different states. It was just a blast.
That's very, very cool. Now, Eric is a part of a podcast called Waves of Awareness.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you like doing the podcast?
Yes, sir. We like it.
Yeah? What's your favorite part about it?
We talk about waves.
Well, that's awesome. But you raise awareness, tell stories, raise awareness for people with disabilities, which I think is really cool because, John, the message of Special Olympics is there's a place for everybody.
That's right.
And yeah. I think that's really neat that you're able to do that.
So, Eric, when did you what did you start playing golf?
I started playing golf a long time.
Long time ago. So, who got you interested? Why did you enjoy golf the first time you played? And sorry about the wind. It's windy out here, isn't it?
I like it.
Yeah.
We played a good time at the golf course.
Yeah. And so I understand that you, besides playing golf, you play another sport too. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah. So what is that? Powerlifting.
Powerlifting.
Yeah. So you love doing that too.
Yeah, sure.
Now that's two really different things, aren't they? Like
that
golf,
might help the
you
golf
got,
game,
you,
though.
Yeah. Well, I would think you want to be strong for the golf course, but you like powerlifting too.
Yeah, sure.
All right. Have you ever won a medal in that?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, have you? Yeah. So. We met Jerry earlier today. He was wearing a couple of medals. You didn't bring your medals today, I noticed.
Oops.
But you've got them all somewhere, don't you? How many? I bet you have a bunch of them in both sports.
Uh-huh.
That's awesome.
Eric, you want to tell him how much you can deadlift?
I deadlift 300 pounds.
Oh, my goodness.
All right, now, D-Mace, I'm looking at D-Mace. He's shaking his head. D-Mace, that's pretty impressive right now. I know
that's
I'm not
very impressive. I'm not deadlifting anything, man. I may need his help to deadlift.
That's awesome. Now, Eric, it says here you're a Marvel superhero fan.
Yes, sir.
It's okay, so I got to ask you, who's your favorite Marvel superhero?
How about Spider-Man?
Oh, I love Spider-Man. High five right there. That's my favorite, too. Now,
have you seen the Spider-Man movies?
Yes, sir.
Okay, all right. You seen the last one?
Yes.
Okay, I like the last one. Did you like it?
I like it both.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Stan Lee.
Okay, cool.
Stan Lee, absolutely. So, any other superheroes besides Spider-Man you like?
Black Panther.
Black Panther. The second one's coming out, right? Are you excited about that one?
November 11th.
Oh, yes.
Knows what it is.
Oh, I'm gonna be ready to see that one. So, you know, John, this is we've had a great day today. Today may not be the easiest day to golf, but but it's just such a great feeling when you get everybody out here and everybody's unified for the cause here.
It is. This is a great event, and it's for a great cause. I was listening. I think I heard one of your earlier guests talk about, you know, it's a great place for people to volunteer to get exposed to this community and find out, you know, what it's like and how to, you know, be a part of it. And once you get involved, you stay involved. It's just such a great uplifting thing.
So, Eric, where do you practice? Where you practice golf? What's your favorite place to practice? Do you have a course that you play, or do you like to play just everywhere?
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Hey, my type of golfer.
Yeah.
Just play anywhere.
So, John, is there a place, like, when you're practicing and getting ready for a tournament like that, what's the training like?
So we practiced at Legends on the little course, on the driving range there. They were really good to work with us, and Eric and I would go out 2-3 times a week and, you know, hit some balls and practice putting and chipping and all the fun stuff that went along with it. So,
yeah. So what do you think you do best, Eric? What's your favorite thing? Is it driving? Is it putting? Chipping?
How about chipping?
Chipping. Oh, that's my least attractive skill. I'm not very good. Maybe you can help me with my chipping.
Yes.
Okay, good. Good. But that's an important thing, right, when you're trying to score. You got to have good chips.
Yeah.
He's in the backyard almost every night chipping golf balls. So that's
good.
He does love it.
So at your house, you chip it. You have your backyard. You can do that.
Yes.
And that helps you get better.
Yes, sure.
Awesome. So when's the next big tournament, you guys? When are you guys competing anytime soon? What are you getting ready for? What are you getting ready for? In powerlifting or golf?
How about golf?
Okay. Well, the next one we golf?
Powerlifting, actually. Powerlifting will kick off in March. He'll train. Maybe February to mid-May, we'll have the summer games at Lipscomb, and then we'll transition right out of that into golf.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, I love a two-sport athlete, so good luck to you, Eric. Thanks a lot for coming out today and telling us your story, and good luck the next time you go out and compete.
Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. Thanks for coming on with us. John, thanks for coming
by. Thank you. Thanks for having us.
All right. D-Mace, what do you think? Two-sport athlete right here.
Can I ask you something?
Yeah.
Yes.
You like golf?
I love golf.
Tiger Woods?
Tiger Woods is the greatest ever. I'm not very good, though. I D-Mace can say it, too. Yeah. Like we play for fun. Yeah. We're not as good as you, though. Probably.
Probably.
And we definitely can't deadlift as much as you. Definitely.
For sure. All right. Well, thanks for coming by, guys. And we're going to wrap it up. We'll turn it over to Jared and company. I'll hand off the headset to Chase here to wrap it up.
The handoff. That's what we do. Thanks to Eric and John Wilson for stopping by. Again, we've had a great day out here at the Hermitage Golf Course. You can help any way you can by texting GIVE to 615-270-9948, or you can visit SpecialOlympicsTN.org. Again, it is a fantastic cause here for the Special Olympics of Tennessee, and we've been so blessed to be able to be out here today. I think we've avoided the storms. They are coming our way, so be careful out there, but don't go anywhere. Stick around. Stillman and Company coming up next. They'll continue to talk about the Titans and what's next for them. That's all coming here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game.